Welcome to the Revenue Enablement Society, Stories from the Trenches, where enablement practitioners share their real-world experiences. Get the scoop on what's happening inside revenue enablement teams across the global RES community. Each segment of Stories from the Trenches shares the good, the bad, and the ugly practices of corporate revenue enablement initiatives. Learn what worked, what didn't work, and how obstacles were eliminated by enablement teams and go-to-market leadership. Sit back, grab a cold one, and join host Paul Butterfield, founder of Revenue Flywheel Group, for casual conversations about the wide and varied profession of revenue enablement, where there's never a one-size-fits-all solution.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Stories from the Trenches, the Revenue Enablement Society podcast, where we bring together practitioners from all over the globe. We talk about the work that they're doing, the innovative ways they're finding of doing it, and sometimes things that didn't go so well because there's lessons to be learned there as well. So we've got another great guest for you this time. I'm excited to introduce you to Sandy Robinson. Welcome, Sandy.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you having me today.
Excited to have you here. Now, Sandy is currently the SVP of Revenue Operations and Enablement at Patra Corporation. But Sandy, I'll give you a minute or two just to talk a little bit about yourself and what you're working on, just so people can get to know you.
Sounds great. So I started at Patra in about mid-April in a role where there previously wasn't a RevOps function. This is a 17-year-old company, so I've really focused on optimizing our HubSpot instance, revamping comp plans. I mean, you name it, consultative training, we're doing it all. So pulled together an onboarding program that, you know, we brought on 15 people this summer. So as I was onboarding myself, created an onboarding program. I'm sure you get that. So prior to that, you know, my experience has been in SaaS, fintech. I was in insurance for a long time, in roles in sales operations, leadership, RevOps for, I don't know, 20 some odd years. I won't say the exact number, but yeah, so I'm again.
We're all 21, Sandy. It doesn't matter.
Yes, yeah. I know.
All right. So I am curious. You had mentioned that you just got back from vacation. And you have a vacation home down in the Keys. What was your favorite thing while you were there to do?
Oh, I love going to the beach. I enjoy fishing, just kind of relaxing in the nice warm air. Even though I live in Florida, I'm a total baby. So the warmer, the better for me.
So sweater weather means go south. Got it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm a Florida kid too. Not anymore, but I remember we would just be amazed this time of year when people from, say, Montreal would be headed down to the beach in their Speedos. And we're like, really, guys? It's not very warm, but I guess compared to Montreal, it was feeling really good to them. Okay. Oh, all right. Totally. So let's get into the Jimmy Kimmel Challenge. So those of you who haven't heard it before, Jimmy Kimmel has decided to retire this coming year. And because Sandy is so well connected, she's been offered his show. So Sandy, you can have anyone you want as your first guest on the couch. Who's going to be there and why did you choose them?
I mean, it has to be Pink. She is like a feminist icon. I love her. She's humble. She's an amazing artist. Just a great mom, woman in general. And, you know, I actually met her once. I was on vacation and actually sipping tequila with her. And she didn't know that, or she didn't know that I knew who she was, and I didn't indicate that. So it was just really cool. Like, she's super down to earth. You'd never know that she was a celebrity or star if you just like kind of meet her on the side. So, but I'd love to like officially meet her and interview her. I think that'd be super awesome.
That sounds really cool. So you're able to have just a human connection. There was no celebrity element to it. There was no, that's cool.
Yeah, it really was.
All right. So let's get into what we're going to talk about today. This is a topic that's probably a little overdue. I've been doing this for 4 years in March this year. And so it's coming up pretty quick, actually, by the time this airs. Let's talk about enablement and RevOps. And from your title, clearly that's an area where you're spending time now. But just from previous conversations with you, I know it's an area where you've been doing a lot of work and you have a lot of great experiences. I want to talk about that. So when we talk about, or when people talk about RevOps versus, or RevOps and enablement, how should those teams partner, or does it matter where they report? Let's just kind of start there with your experience, and then we'll go deeper.
Sure. I mean, coming from a sales background early in my career and through sales leadership, I think it was always just ingrained in the way that I looked at things, right? So becoming a sales manager, you have to learn how to coach and train and all these things. And so now, exactly, you think. So flash forward however long later, again, I won't mention any years, when you think about reporting structures, companies, we have more and more silos throughout organizations, right? And the reporting structures can be very different across organizations. And I think ultimately, we want those teams to really work hand in hand, and they should follow the customer journey. I mean, that is truly what I passionately believe. In my world, RevOps and enablement is under one umbrella, and it, you know, makes sense for what's happening, the size of our company. As companies get larger, you know, I think it makes sense to have those functions have more specificity and specific leadership. But ultimately, there needs to be a clear definition of roles and responsibilities and how they go hand in hand. So, for example, if it's under the CRO, then you would have, I would guess, a little bit easier path of coordinating that, right? So whether it's all called
in my experience, at least, it is pretty easy.
Yeah, it makes it a lot simpler as long as you're not kind of siloed out too much within your own organization, which does happen. But then when it falls out, like say, for example, there's a chief marketing officer and a chief revenue officer. And, you know, then within that, they've got kind of different levels of enablement and operations, marketing ops. It starts to get more complicated. So ultimately, starting with the customer journey, much like you would do anything else, and roles and responsibilities among, you know, within the customer journey to sort out, you know, who's doing what and how can you really partner. But I think you have to be intentional about it, particularly if the reporting structure isn't under one function.
Yeah, give it a little, takes a little more thought. I mean, you're speaking to, you know, a big fan when you talk customer journey enablement. That is, that's how I love to look at it too. And in fact, when I don't know if I told you this, when I launched my company about a year ago, I was excited to find out no one had trademarked that, because I had been using that phrase. I'm sure it wasn't original to me, but nobody had protected it. So since I was launching a brand, I was able to grab that because I look at it the same way. It's how are we enabling all of the teams that are interfacing one way or another with those customers? How are we creating an elevated experience? It's risky to try to compete on product features or price. And so there's got to be some other reason that people want to do business with you. This is it. So let's get into some specifics. So taking what you just said, let's talk about an approach. Let's say rolling out a new process, or perhaps it's even a full new sales methodology. Walk us through what that looks like with this, with a healthy partnership with enablement and RevOps.
Sure. I see this a lot. And, you know, I've been a part of companies where we've had challenges rolling out new methodologies, and particularly if you're partnering with like a third party to try to roll something out. But let's say you create a new sales methodology, right? You're going to use Challenger, you're going to use Command of the Message, or whatever elements that you create and bake. And I don't, side note, I don't particularly say, you know, I'm not married to one or the other. I think you just have to calibrate and use the best pieces of each methodology and calibrate within your own company. So that's probably a whole nother topic. But in terms of, you know, the methodology, I see this all the time where you roll something out and then you have the forgetting curve. People totally, you know, kind of drift off. They go to this, like, whether it's a webinar or in person or something, company spends a ton of money. And then you fail to do, you know, align the process and the systems. And a lot of times that's because one department is touting this one thing, getting it rolled out, like, hey, we're doing this, and they haven't really collaborated with the other departments. So I really believe you have to connect the methodology to the process and to the systems and make sure it all works together. If you don't have all three of those aligned, your initiative will fail. So mark my words, you will fail. And, you know, we rolled out MedPick last summer. So we had some training. We had to train the trainer. I actually got certified, all this stuff. And so that's great. That's kind of one piece of it. And then we documented the process. How does that work within the customer journey? What do we have to do to align the stages in HubSpot? We use HubSpot for our CRM. So what needs to happen there? What are the stage requirements? Putting together that playbook. And then we aligned Gong, created a board in Gong. We created the functionality within HubSpot and then train the people on the systems. Then there's reporting and everything. So you have to have that kind of full picture. And if you don't have enablement and RevOps working together, or whatever that looks like in your organization, you're doomed to fail. So having all three of those components, I think, is super critical. And enablement is really the glue that holds that all together. Because as you know, if you get enablement involved, and for me, it's like put on my enablement hat because I'm kind of doing both right now. But if you get enablement involved early, they're going to figure out, okay, where do we need to surface these documents in the system? And they can work with RevOps and figure out what fields and how this works together. And do we need training? And that training should be, you know, a combination of some sort of, maybe it's a video meeting, maybe it's an SOP doc, maybe it's a social learning, a channel in Slack, whatever it is, but it's got to kind of all work together. And this even goes back to, like, for anybody who has a training background, like the old school ADDIE model, right? Is just really tying all of those things together. And, you know, but we can't forget to do it. We can't just like throw something out there and expect it to work. You know, it's a spaghetti against the wall. We just kind of shove it out there. We got the thing done. We did it at our kickoff. Woohoo. And then the thing just goes by the wayside when people get back and they get into their grind and their email boxes and all this other crap. So I get real excited about this stuff, but you have to put it all together and package it or it doesn't work.
It doesn't yet. So many companies still try and do it that way. I was talking a couple months ago.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was talking with a prospective client the other day, and this is a head of sales that I've known for years. In fact, I used to work with him, respect him in many ways. Yet when I talked to them about what they were doing with their methodology, he's like, "Oh, well, we had everybody watch some training, some MedPick training videos, so we're good to go." And so again, right? This is a guy, very, very smart sales leader, very successful in other ways. But there's still work to do there. Definitely is.
They're checking the box. I mean, it's like you're checking the box. And, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes the big kind of monster training companies that are out there, they feed off of that because they get you to, you know, now sign up for their reinforcement program and then sign up for this and add on this. They're loving that because you, as the leader in your organization, failed to put together a sustainable program and you didn't tie those three things together. So I think it just goes back to that core methodology to process to systems, making sure that all works together. And the offshoot of that is the reporting, the analytics, and the continuous improvement from it. So you have to actually do something about it, monitor it, and, you know, make sure. And that's where enablement and RevOps, again, can come hand in hand very nicely.
To do what you're talking about, which again, I couldn't agree more, you've got to have the right systems. And you've mentioned a couple of times. Is there any more to be said about how RevOps and enablement work together and even evaluating and selecting and deploying those systems? So in other words, I've come into companies, and you probably have too, where yes, we really need a methodology, but we don't have the infrastructure ready to roll out a methodology in the way that you've described and have it stick. And so you have to even take a step back and evaluate that. Can we talk about that for a minute? What does that look like? How do those two teams work together, or should they work together?
Yeah, that can be tough because they might have their own budgets for tech, right? And then people want to own the budget and they want to, you know, this is my tool, this is your tool, and those kind of things. But so it starts to get challenging. But, you know, if you think about any tech selection, you have to have the right stakeholders involved. So it even starts with who's using the tool. So, like, for example, if you have a prospecting tool, you want to get an SDR, maybe somebody who is like a power user and they're kind of, you know, into the system, you can use them even later as an SME, get the mm-hmm. sales leader, marketing leader, enablement, all the people involved early on in the selection process. So I have a, you know, kind of a way to go through like a rubric for decision criteria. Mm-hmm. And then each person weighs in on the key things that, you know, matter to them, to their department, and then to the overall customer journey. So if you think of that, you have to always have the right stakeholders, and enablement should have a seat at the table early in the selection process if it impacts the, you know, in their realm of responsibility. So like for, let's just pretend it's, you know, marketing, sales, and customer success mm-hmm. in a perfect world. And mm-hmm. they have that involvement and they're going to be able to think of things critically. And then so does RevOps, because RevOps will think of things like, for example, marketing. I've had this experience not that long ago. Marketing would create, you know, okay, here's our enablement tool that we decided to use for the company. Mm-hmm. We've set it up, we put all the cool stuff, whatever, whatever. And then RevOps is like, dude, it doesn't work with the CRM. Like it's, there's no integration. So like, that's a situation that I'm dealing with. And because there wasn't a full suite of people in the selection process that would catch, you know, because every, let's
that's a big
note.
Miss though. But
well, every
okay.
company says, every vendor, every great salesperson is going to tell you their tool integrates to whatever CRM you're using. Yeah, and that's not true. Untrue, right? Yeah, sure. Right. Everybody's got an open API, but you know, come on, there are a lot of limitations, particularly when you're, you know, depending on your CRM, obviously Salesforce has like a ton of options, and then the scope mm-hmm. narrows as you go down, right? So, yeah. But that's just an example, like not getting RevOps involved, and maybe enablement's doing that kind of thing. And on the flip side, if RevOps isn't getting enablement involved, how do you know, how are you going to set it up? I mean, these are the folks that are going to own the content, own the materials, and they need to be experts in the system so they can train on the system. So why not have mm-hmm. them in early? So you can't make the party too big though, because if you have too many people involved, it starts getting really ugly and messy. So you have to have like a true racy chart to determine mm-hmm. what your role and responsibilities are in the selection process, and align on like an ultimate criteria. Like there's some mm-hmm. deal breakers. Like my deal breaker, it always is, when I ran a Salesforce shop, there's got to be an app on the AppExchange, right? That's my deal breaker, because I don't want to mess with other integrations. I just don't, because it takes time, development, and there's plenty of options out there. You can narrow it down, and that helps narrow down your field. So you have to like have your deal breakers and whatever that is, and everybody should weigh in and agree on them. So maybe there's five key people in the selection process that you pick or something. So, I mean, that's
so
in an ideal world.
So enough of a group to get, So you're getting enough different perspectives, but you're not getting bogged down in you know, over-analysis by committee, I guess, for lack of a better
Like if you send a group email to 15 sales managers, like you're never going to get anywhere. So you pick the one representative sales manager that's going to speak for the group, and their vote is the one that matters, and you know, for the various groups. So that's the way I'd do it.
I've heard this attributed to various people over time, but I love the expression that a fool with a tool is still a fool. And it sounds like you would agree with that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, train the trainer and adoption and making these things sticky.
I mean, you have to let them use it, try it out, mm-hmm. break it, and give you feedback. That's mm-hmm. huge. I'll just give you an example. Last week, we turned on a bunch of changes in HubSpot. We put mm-hmm. daily office hours on and a form to submit to say like, hey, first of all, if they found any bugs, but second of all, like just suggestions and things and screenshots. Mm-hmm. And you have to get feedback, because at the end of the day, if it's not set up where it's usable, mm-hmm. they're not going to use it, or they're going to make a spreadsheet and do it on their own. They're not going to do it in the system.
And or their notebook. I've had that one. Yeah. It's all in here. You're waving a notebook at you.
It's in my notebook. It's in my Google tasks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a responsibility, I think, of RevOps and enablement to make sure the user experience, our internal user experience, our customers mm-hmm. are able to do what they need in a timely manner, see what they need to see, know what they need to get accomplished. And but the worst thing you can do is ask for their feedback and not do anything about it either. And so, you know, the tools, they don't just magically work. The sales leaders need to use them. In prior worlds, you know, I had this one sales leader that I would work with, and you know, this person just would never actually show up for the trainings, didn't know how to do it themselves, and you know, we would chase around in the CRM to update this person's stuff for them, and they couldn't train their own team. And so the manager has to own it. So not just the RevOps and enablement. RevOps and enablement
is a great point.
Support the managers, train the trainers, and they need to own it. And they need to hold their teams accountable to using it and getting the feedback. So that's why I always say train the trainer. It's like, we've got to teach the managers, get the managers buy-in. Because if the managers do it, their team sure as hell is not going to do it. That's for sure. Mm-mm. So no. that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good for thee, not sure. For me. Never works. Never works.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that.
You reminded me of someone I hadn't thought about in a long time. When I won't say names, but when I was at Vonage, we actually had a sales. He was either a VP or was he one level up from that? He had two VPs reporting to him, now that I think of it. And it was a point of pride for this individual that he had never opened up Salesforce. So, I mean, it was a point of pride. It was like, I don't need that, right? I know how to run a sales territory. I don't need, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so you can imagine that created all sorts of compliance issues within anybody that reported to him, because they're all like, well, he's not using it. So why should I put anything in there? Because he's not going to look at it anyway. And yeah, it was crazy.
Well, not to mention the rest of this person's managers and RevOps, sales ops, whoever, they're having to probably build spreadsheets and decks and stuff on the side for this person because they refuse to actually look in the CRM, which may have all the information right there. So yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. He was managed out eventually, so it got better. All right. So not by me, but you know, by the powers that be. All right. So one of the other things when you and I were talking that are so critical when you're rolling out things together is also the reporting. How are you tracking that adoption? How do you know if it's even meeting the objectives? I mean, hopefully you had clear outcomes and problems that you were trying to solve for when you selected this piece of tech or this program to bring it in. But how do you start reporting and measuring to see if it was the right choice? Was it successful? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I always like to start with some sort of an objective. Like you said, what problem are you trying to solve? So for example, with our HubSpot, we're calling it HubSpot 2.0. We're making, you know, made a bunch of changes, and it was kind of solving for a number of challenges that we were having prior to me joining the company. And so the objectives are to reduce a cancel rate. I won't get into the exact numbers, but reduce our cancellation and reduce our push rates, because reps are pushing deals consistently from like the 30th to the 15th to the 30th to the 15th and things like that. So those are like the objectives. So they're pretty simple to track, right? Because those are kind of out of the box HubSpot reports. So, but we're getting down to the rep level, seeing where the behavior, because it's usually driven by two, three, four people that are, you know, really driving the number. And then that's where really enablement comes in, because where now, what do you do about that, right? So you've got this data point, this information, and how do you then go back and address those issues with, particularly, let's say there's four people that are pushing those bars way over there. You don't need to deploy new training for the whole team. You just want to address those people and find out, well, why are their deals pushing? What's happening there? So I think, but you have to look at that frequently. It's not good enough to just be like, oh, here's an objective. We'll check it at the end of next quarter, see how it went. Like I want to be in front of it and look like literally every week, every month. And how can we get in front of these things in real time? I mean, it's so great. Most of the data and all these tools is available in real time, right? So it's you can adjust and iterate. But you just have to make the reporting aligned with the key objectives, you know, pretty basic, but don't overcomplicate it, because if you overcomplicate it, it's going to make it too much of a bear to try to figure out and everything. So just what are those, you know, KPIs? It's key is a reason. And what are the leading indicators from that, right? Like, how do you detect that ahead of time? And just align.
How do you go about narrowing those down, Sandy? If anything, you're right. There's so much data and so much available in real time. If anything, I could see people getting bogged down in it rather than not having enough. So any advice for those people listening on, again, you could measure 1,000 things. How do you pick the right, as you say, the K is for key. Yeah. What are the key, actual key performance indicators, et cetera? What process do you follow to get to that?
Well, I always think of my job as driving revenue. So what is going to have the biggest impact to revenue now, this year? Because revenue recognition, you know, if anyone's in SaaS, that's the key thing on your mind. You can sell all the ACV you want, sign all the contracts if you want, but if it doesn't go live, nothing matters, right? There's no revenue.
Can you say clawback?
Nice.
At least that's what I think of. All those years in SaaS sales, clawback. Yeah.
Yep. Clawback. Exactly.
You want that thing to go live.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Writing a comp plan with that in it right now. So anyway, if you go, you think about that. So what are the things that are going to have the biggest impact? Because, I mean, when I looked at our org, I mean, I have a list like that goes along, like this list. It's like probably 3-4 pages of all the challenges that we have. But what are the ones that are going to make a material impact and that are going to make a material impact sooner versus later? So how can we impact this year's plan number, and then translating that to a salesperson, how can we impact your paycheck now, right? And so I think that's what you have to narrow it down to, because ultimately you have to sell, the stuff upwards too, right? You have to not just justify your tech, but they want to know that this is adopting, that this initiative we've put out is actually working. So what do, does this align with your company blueprint or whatever that is, and pick those impactful ones, which is why I picked cancel rate and push rate, because those are two direct impacts of go live, which is revenue faster, which means more revenue in year. And anyway, so that's just, that's the way I always look at it. You know, if you're in the revenue business, is how do you, what's the biggest impact to revenue?
You're talking about pushes in Salesforce or a CRM. The longest, the oldest deal I personally can remember ever encountering when doing some audit and cleanup was just under 1,100 days, like 1,089 days, this opportunity. And I just wanted to pick up the phone and call the rep and say, so are you thinking it's going to be day 1,190? You know, is there something fundamentally that's changing? Or should we just take this out? Yeah, it's amazing how these deals get life, develop a life of their own sometimes.
I mean, we just did a major cleanup over the summer. I mean, there were some deals that were like, you know, 395 days, 460. I think the average was like 218 or something. It was crazy. So we did a lot of cleanup, but a lot of that really went back to, that's why rolling out something like MedPick or another qualification process is so important, not to go down a rabbit hole, but you have to qualify deals out of your pipeline too. And for whatever reason, reps just want to like hang on to it. And it's
well,
like,
they need that 2.7x. Whenever the boss looks, there's got to be 2.7x in there. Oh. Never mind if it's like ghost opportunities, right? But it looks good. It's I think back to my days as a sales rep, and if I was honest, my main objective in a weekly pipeline review was just to, you know, keep the boss happy for another week.
Right. So keep your job.
It was exactly. Well, this has been fun, but we are actually running up on time, which is amazing. All right. Cause it doesn't seem like it, but thank you. I don't want to let you go though, without having you drop one more piece of knowledge or wisdom on us. And this may or may not be related to what we've been talking about, but if you were given the gift of time travel with a couple limitations, one, you can only go back and visit some younger version of yourself. And number two, you can only coach yourself in one area. What is the number one thing you wish you'd understood earlier in life or in your career?
I think it's being a great collaborator. And coming from sales as an individual contributor, you're hunting mm-hmm. and running out to close the next deal and everything. And I think the value in later on in learning how to apply my sales skills to internal collaboration and working with mm-hmm. other leaders, managing up, working with other teams, working with peers, and understanding how best to communicate with them, but also be effective, right? And get results mm-hmm. because these things don't work if you don't work together across silos and departments, even within your own team. So I think mm-hmm. that would be the advice. And I always go back to like Stephen Covey. I'm kind of an old school 7 Habits of Highly Effective mm-hmm. People person. Learned that way back in the day. But seek first to understand, then be understood. So that is huge when you're working with other people, because first of all, sometimes they might view you as a threat or a change in their world and things like that, but just really trying to understand their world, whether it's the teams that you serve, your peers, other departments within your organization, it's always great to really take that approach.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thanks for spending your time and having this conversation with us. I'm excited for this one to drop in the next month or so. Anything else before we go?
No, I just, I'm excited about this. I really appreciate the conversations that we have and this whole idea of RevOps and revenue enablement just really working together hand in hand.
Yeah, me too. It's the only way that it can work. And I've been in both. I've been in situations where the teams worked very well together and situations where there was almost an adversary relationship. And it's tough. You make it work, but it's not easy. So, all right. Well, thank you to everyone who's spent the last half hour with Sandy and I as well. We appreciate your loyalty. We appreciate you investing your time with us. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another great episode.
Thanks for joining this episode of Stories from the Trenches. For more revenue enablement resources, be sure to join the Revenue Enablement Society at resociety.global. That's resociety.global.